have a lot of things I want to get off my chest.
We just gotta do what we do. We play like we play. We be us. We be special. We smell greatness. We finish strong. Yes, from the top.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are tonight's entertainment.
Welcome to the Something to Say radio show on WGSO 990 AM and streaming live on WGSO.com. No subjects are off limits, so call in with your questions or comments to 504-556-9696. And now, here are the hosts of the Something to Say radio show, BJ Rust with Mike Hinson.
All right, welcome to another edition of the Something to Say radio show on WGSO 990 AM and streaming live on WGSO.com. Finally back at it. It's been about a week. Been on vacation, and then once I got back from Nashville, got sick. That's right. No worries. It's not COVID. Just a sinus infection, and I think it's probably from adapting to two different climates within a few days, and so, anyways, the trip was good. Mike and I will talk a little bit more about it in depth tomorrow night. But the thing that wasn't so great was, of course, the fact that the Saints didn't pull off a victory on Sunday. Unfortunately, they lost 23-21. And, you know, it could have won either way. There was a couple things that didn't go the Saints' way. Namely, we had an issue with kicking field goals, the extra points, which would have at least led to a tie game. And then there was a terrible, terrible roughing the passer call on that ended up result when the play would have resulted in a interception in the end zone. The Saints would have kept them off the board. However, that's just the way it goes. And I think the Saints played well, all things considered, being without C.J. Gardner-Johnson, being without Alvin Kamara. Mark Ingram did break Deuce McAllister's all-time Saints rushing record, so that was a highlight of the day. But and, you know, it goes back to Trevor Siemian, I thought, played well also. You know, he was 19 of 34, 298 yards and two touchdowns. I thought he played well. I wouldn't put any of the last two games on him. The biggest thing is we've got to get, we got to have more big plays, and we got to be able to stop their big plays. And that's just the way it goes. You know, a lot of the issues that we've had over the last 2 weeks have really been self-inflicted. So, you know, whether it be giving up a 64-yard pass at the with a minute left in the game against the Falcons, or not being able to kick extra points, either way, it doesn't matter. Those are all things that are controllable. And right now, the Saints aren't controlling the controllables. So this week, we've got the Eagles. And you know, they're about where we've been. They're 4-6. We're 5-4. So if I'm not mistaken, I believe that the game will be in Philadelphia. So that's never easy, and it's cold weather. I'm sure it won't be sunny and 70 degrees. We'll have to look that up for tomorrow, but yeah, you know, it's unfortunate the two outcomes that we've had, but if you're going to look for the silver lining in all of this, the Saints are still in a playoff position. The Buccaneers lost last week, so they're still just one game ahead of the Saints. So it's not all doom and gloom. I do believe the Saints team can make the playoffs. I think they can be a top seven team in the NFC. The rest of it, really, it's up to them. you know, whether it's holding on to the ball, you know, when it's thrown to you, or not taking bad penalties, you know, all those things are very controllable. And it seems like, you know, the Titans, let's be fair, they're a very good team. They're 8-2. They're the number one seed in the AFC. And the fact that you should have beat them speaks volumes to how good this team can be. But that's not been the issue. The issue has been 1 week it's up, the next week it's down. 1 week it's up, the next week it's down. The last 2 weeks being an exception because this is the first time they've lost two in a row all season. So, you know, we'll just have to see. They had issues last year with Jalen Hurts, and I mean that was his first start was against the Saints last year, so I don't expect that he'll have the same game that he had last year against them, because now they're prepared for it. They didn't, you know, he just ran wild last year. And I don't foresee that to be the case this week. The Saints, the bright part is that our defense has been great all year long. We're giving up a little more than 19 points a game. Excuse me. The problem is that, you know, as our offense is only scoring 24, almost 25 points a game. So, I mean, if you look at it just statistically, essentially, you're playing one-score games every game, and that's really not the situation that you want to find yourself in. But also some more good news was that Alvin Kamara returned to practice yesterday, and that's huge. You know, it showed on Sunday, you know, how important he is to that running game, and how much he was missed. You know, because I think like the offense is running like 70% through him now. So super important to get him back on the field. And let's see. He was the only one that got back on the field, though. Ty Montgomery, he was out with a hand injury. Taysom Hill was out with a foot injury. Tron Armstead was out with knee and shoulder issues. Ryan Ramczyk was out with a knee. Malcolm Roach was out with a knee. K-Pass was out with an ankle, so, you know, we'll have to see how that goes and how that unfolds in the next few days. On their side, on the injury report, Fletcher Cox, Dallas Goedert, and Davion Taylor all did not participate. Sean Bradley, Jason Hargrave, Lane Johnson, Jason Kelce, Rodney McLeod, were all limited, and Jordan Howard and Devontae Smith were both full practice, were both full goes at practice. So they've got a lot of folks on the injured list just like we do. So we'll just have to see how that unfolds. But the biggest one is their tight end, who they use quite often, him being out with a concussion and seeing if he can pass concussion protocol in order to get back on the field. And Jason Kelce, he is their center. He was out, and also Lane Johnson, another part of their, another big part of their offensive line. They were out with non-injury related issues, so I would expect those guys to play on Sunday. But yeah, you know, it goes back to like what we were talking about earlier. I don't put this on Trevor Siemian. I think that he's actually played a little bit better than Jameis had before him. He's completed almost 58% of his passes for 706 yards. He's thrown 5 touchdowns to no interceptions in 3 games. It's unfortunate that the Saints haven't won any that he's started, but like I said, I don't put any of it on him. And I think he's done a great job, and he's done a great job at of being a leader, and all reports are that he's, you know, he's been very calm and been calm, cool, and confident in the pocket and leading the team, and that's what's super important to get things done. So, you know, hopefully things can start meshing a little bit. And that, you know, that could be a lot of it too. Is that, you know, he's played, this will be his 3rd start, 4th game. You know, nobody was picking him to even be in the equation of being the starting quarterback. So there is a little bit of putting the balls where the players want them, things like that, and getting that chemistry going. But, you know, we're, here we are. This is going to be week 11. There's really no time for any of this. And it'll be interesting to see after the season's over with how this all unfolds, because the salary cap situation is not going to get any better. There's a lot of rumors about Russell Wilson possibly being traded, Aaron Rodgers. That's about, I think, a 90% possibility of him being traded. And then who knows what else is going to happen with free agency and things like that. There could be they could be changing from Baker Mayfield in Cleveland. So a lot of different variables. So, and of course, Jameis, you know, coming back and being healthy, I don't know if he'll be ready for the start of the season. But, you know, we'll have to see. But, you know, Trevor Siemian is really on an audition now to either continue to be a backup, possibly here, or maybe even get himself a starting job. We'll have to see. But I don't really foresee him to be a starting quarterback in next season. But I think he has performed very well. And he's definitely he's going to draw interest. Whether it be here in New Orleans or somewhere else, somebody's definitely going to want to have someone of his caliber be there and be part of the team. So, all right, well, let's take a break, and we'll come back with more of the Something to Say radio show right after this. NFL news, not exactly the good kind of NFL news that we like to talk about, but Henry Ruggs III looks like he is in more trouble over his quote-unquote alleged DUI arrest from a few weeks ago. He's been ordered to, on Wednesday, he was ordered to come back to court on Monday after the judge had learned that he had missed a required alcohol test while being on house arrest. Following the fatal crash he's accused of causing by driving drunk up to speeds 156 miles per hour. And that's according to ESPN.com. And a note posted later by the court record shows that Ruggs missed a test at 4:41 p.m. on Saturday and that he completed a, quote, client-initiated remote breath test at 6:28, so about an hour and a half or more later than what he was supposed to. Apparently, he has to, by part of his bail, he has to do 4 alcohol breathalyzers per day to make sure that he's not drinking. And we said it when this all happened. It's completely horrific and unfortunate that a poor 23-year-old girl and her dog lost their lives due to drinking and driving. But, you know, here's a situation where a 22-year-old kid with Henry Ruggs, has the world at his feet. He's, you know, making millions of dollars playing in the NFL and makes a completely idiotic decision to not only drive drunk, but drive drunk at those ridiculous speeds and cause the, a senseless death. And if that's not enough, you know, you're out on bail only because you have the money to make it happen, where most people wouldn't have that luxury. And then you can't even go play by the rules that you're given to, in order to stay at your house and not have to be in the county jail. It's so disheartening to see, you know, how these young men behave, and they think that they are above the law, and that they can do whatever they want, and it's okay because they were good. They were or are good at playing a sport, and it's just disgusting. And then, you know, that makes me think about the really horrific thing that I saw just today with former NFL running back Zach Stacy, who played for the Jets and he played for the Rams, and a video was released today, I believe. If not, well, I saw it today. I don't know if it was, yeah, it was released this morning. That of him, and he's 30 years old, and just, and there's, I don't know why there's a camera at this, at his ex-girlfriend's house that he shares a baby with, but it was a home surveillance system, and it's him literally just beating the hell out of her. You know, body slams her on the bounce, the baby bounce thing, and punches her in the face a few times. It's just sickening and disgusting. And I don't know if he's been arrested yet for this, but I'm sure he will be. And, you know, just gross. And I don't understand what's wrong with these guys. I mean, I get it. That's, you know, he's playing football, and I love watching football. It's something that I enjoy. And I know it's testosterone fueled, but there is absolutely zero reason for any of this. And I, you know, I think about that poor kid that's, you know, only 5 months old, is sitting on the couch while his dad is beating the hell out of his mom. It's just gross and ridiculous. And I hope that he gets arrested and goes to jail for a while, because he needs to. He needs some type of help, because there's no reason for any of this. Absolutely stupid and senseless again. So, I mean, the NFL is going to have to get their stuff together. And, you know, if it means zero tolerance policies, I think that's maybe the way that it should go, because, you can't have these young men going out and thinking that they're above the law and can do whatever the hell they want, and there's no repercussions for their actions, and unfortunately innocent people get hurt. It's just terrible. So let's see here. Let's talk a little bit about some brighter news. we had talked about earlier in the year about there being a movie about Coach Peyton from the Saints. That was about him. It was called Home Teams, and or Home Team, I'm sorry, and that it was about whenever Coach Peyton was suspended for the Bounty Gate situation, and would go home to coach his son's Pop Warner team, starring Kevin James, which, you know, like we said, you know, whenever you pick somebody to portray you in a movie, I don't think anybody picks Kevin James, but you know he's funny, I guess. So I'm looking forward to it, and it's being done by Adam Sandler's Happy Madison Productions, so it'll at least be entertaining at minimum. And I know Coach Peyton has a cameo in it as well, so looking forward to that. It'll be released on Netflix on January 28th of next year, 2022, so not too far off, just a couple of months. And I'm sure it'll be fun at minimum. May not be Academy Award winning performances, but I think it'll be fun, and it'll be at least it'll be a little bit more of a lighter look at that whole situation that we all hated so much, seeing Coach Peyton be suspended for a year. So, all right, let's take a break, and we'll come back with more of the Something to Say radio show right after the news.
But the cue never came and the lights, they never went down. So we're passing the time while time passes us. The fast lanes a term never applied to us. Without a time to my name or a prayer.
All right, welcome back to the Something to Say radio show on WGSO 990 AM. Over the last couple of weeks, the Major League Baseball has done their yearly awards. And I thought we should probably tonight, actually, it'll be where they announce the Most Valuable Player Awards for both the American and National Leagues. But let's go through the rundown of who's already won this year. We talked a little bit about the Gold Glove Awards that came out, I believe it was last week or week before. But the Roberto Clemente Award, that's in recognition of generosity for Roberto Clemente's generosity in his native Dominican Republic, was given to slugger Nelson Cruz. That honor is bestowed annually to the player who best represents the game of baseball through extraordinary character, community involvement, philanthropy, and positive contributions both on and off the field. That's a big honor, and I know that's one that most players they really cherish when they receive that award. And then Also, we had the Hank Aaron Awards. The American League winner was Vladimir Guerrero. He tied for the Major League lead in home runs with 48, and finished first with in American League and on base percentage, and slugged .601. And so that was a tremendous year for Vladimir Guerrero. And at such a young age, his future, I think, is really, really bright. And then the National League, it was Bryce Harper. He led the league with a .615 slugging percentage and an OPS of 1.044, and hit over 300. Also had 35 home runs and 42 doubles in 141 games. We talked about the Gold Glove Awards, the Silver Slugger Awards, which was given to the best hitter at each position. The American League, obviously, Salvador Perez, with the year that he had, he hit 48 home runs as well, tying Vladimir Guerrero, who was also a Silver Slugger Award winner. Marcus Semien of the Blue Jays was the award winner at second in the American League. Rafael Devers, third base from the Red Sox. At shortstop, Xander Bogaerts. Outfield was Teoscar Hernandez, and Aaron Judge and Cedric Mullins from the Orioles. Designated hitter was Shohei Ohtani. National League, Buster Posey, which ended up being his last year because he announced his retirement last week from the Giants. First baseman, Eddie Freeman. Second baseman, Ozzie Albies. And third baseman, Austin Riley, all from the world champion Braves. At shortstop was Fernando Tatis Jr. Outfielders were Juan Soto, Bryce Harper, Nick Castellanos, and pitcher was Max Fried from the Braves. All right, and then we go to Manager of the Year Awards. In the National League, it was given to Gabe Kapler, who got 28 first-place votes to win the award. But what a year that he had with the Giants, leading them to a Major League best 107 wins, and really just a team that came out of nowhere. Nobody saw that coming, what they were able to accomplish this last year. And with the pitching that they have, man, it's tough to say that they're going to be falling back anytime soon. So in the American League, Kevin Cash of the Tampa Bay Rays was given the Manager of the Year Award for the second year in a row, and he joins only Bobby Cox, who used to manage the Braves, and receiving the honor 2 years in a row. All right, Rookie of the Year, the National League, was Jonathan India from the Reds. He led all rookies in on-base percentage, doubles, walks, runs scored, and games played, while also ranking second in OPS. In the American League, it was Randy Arozarena, who had a tremendous 2020 postseason, and for a full season, I'm a little bitter about this one because he was a St. Louis Cardinal and was traded for prospects, and you know they didn't feel like they had room for him, and that's really unfortunate. But he was just the third rookie to go 20 and 20, meaning that he had 20 stolen bases and 20 home runs, and led all rookies with a .274 average, and just a tremendous player. And you know, we'll see how it all works out in Tampa, because they're known not to hold on to their stars. So we'll see if he stays with them after a few years. But tremendous player, and glad to see it. Last night, the Cy Young Awards were announced, and in the National League, I was a little bit surprised. I thought for sure it had been Max Scherzer, but actually Corbin Burnes of the Milwaukee Brewers won the award. He did lead the league in ERA at 2.43 and strikeout rate 35.6, and a strikeout-to-walk ratio of 6.88. Which I know he actually broke a record earlier in the year, which I think he struck out 58 batters before walking one. So, you know, not surprising, but at the same time, a little surprising that Max Scherzer didn't win, especially being on an East, you know, being on a coast team. In the American League, it was Robbie Ray won the Cy Young from the American League. He plays for the Blue Jays. He led the majors in strikeouts with 2.48 and led the American League in ERA at 2.84 innings at 1.93 and a third, and walks hits per innings pitched at 1.04, and became the first Toronto pitcher since 2003 when Roy Halladay won the Cy Young Award. Now, tonight, the MVP awards will be given out. And the finalists for the American League is Vladimir Guerrero, Shohei Ohtani, and Marcus Semien. Guerrero and Semien are both on the Blue Jays, Ohtani with the Angels. I would be shocked and surprised if anybody other than Shohei Ohtani wins the award wins the MVP award, considering the year that he had, both at the plate and then also being a pitcher as well. You know, he started the All-Star game for the American League and just had a tremendous season. And one of the cooler stories, I think, in all of baseball this year. In the National League, the finalists are Bryce Harper from Philly, Juan Soto from the Washington Nationals, and Fernando Tatis Jr. from the Padres. I don't know. That one's a toss-up. It's really tough to say. It could be Bryce Harper, but I think right now Fernando Tatis, in my opinion, is probably the best overall player in the National League. So I'm going to be a little biased. I'm going to go with him. But we'll see. It'll be announced tonight at 5 o'clock our time, which that just gives away the fact that this is a pre-recorded show. So the announcement will already come. So we'll give to we'll update you tomorrow on who wins the award. And let's see here. Some other news. We had, you know, the other day I was driving, I live uptown, I was driving on Britannia, and I saw that that the Britannia Theater is hopefully going to be reopening by the by late 2021. So that means, shoot, we only have like another month or so left. So hopefully before the end of the year, the Britannia will be opening, because I'm going to tell you what, it's been nice to be able to see movies at home. But it's still not the same, especially when there's movies coming out like the new Ghostbusters that comes out, I believe, tonight. You know, I'm really excited to go see that in a theater, and I would love to be able to go see it at the Britannia, because I think it's just the coolest movie theater that there is. You know, it's like going and hanging out at a really rich friend's house, but a friend's house nonetheless, and just a cool atmosphere. And I'm really excited to see that they're going to be back up and running from the storm. So when it does open, hopefully we can have somebody on and talk about it a little bit more, so everybody can go check it out. And let's see. Oh, and other news that probably nobody knew, and I, to be honest with you, I don't really understand why, but apparently there is a new show coming to Hulu that is based on Pamela Anderson and Tommy Lee, and they're in the lovemaking video, we'll just put it that way, that was released in the 90s, that somebody had got their hands on, you know, I guess without their knowing. But yeah, they are they're actually making a show about that. I couldn't believe it. And I can't say that I'm going to be watching it, although it does have Andrew Dice Clay in it. So there you go. What more reason do you need to watch? But I didn't think that their lives were so interesting that you needed, I think it's an 8-part series on this whole fiasco. So we'll have to see how that works. And I don't know, maybe watch it if there's nothing else to do. All right, well, let's get out of here. Let's take a break, and I'll come back, and we'll wrap the day up with some Florida Man stories. You're listening to Something to Say Radio Show on WGSO 990 AM. So ever I feel has come to light, whatsoever I fall on came out.
What's your plan for tomorrow? Are you a leader or will you follow? Are you a fighter or will you cower? It's our time to take back the power. What's your plan for tomorrow? Are you a leader or will you follow? Are you a fighter or will you cower? It's our time to take back the power. What you gonna do when they show up in black suits on your street and our mid boots? Gonna say when they strip your rights away and the tax man makes you pay. Let me be honest, what you feel today. Oh, we don't need to run and hide. Oh, we won't be pushed off to the side. What's your plan for tomorrow?
Welcome to Something to Say Radio Show on WGSO 990 AM. It's that time of the week. Every Thursday, we like to make that trip over to Florida and see how the other half lives. So without any further ado, let's make our trip to the Sunshine State.
Down to Florida, we welcome you to the Sunshine State. They're kicking back and soaking up the rays every day in Florida.
All right, so the first story, let's see, will take us to Milton, Florida. I'm not familiar, I haven't heard of that place, but the headline, this is courtesy of News Channel 8. Florida man caught humping dog attacked owner when confronted, officials say. A Milton man has been arrested after a fight that allegedly started when the man was caught, quote-unquote, humping someone's dog, according to the arrest report. John Miller, 33, is charged with domestic violence battery, domestic violence aggravated assault, and criminal mischief. Miller was caught humping a dog when the owner confronted him. He said Miller attacked him, punching him in the head and upper body, leaving red marks and cuts, according to the Santa Rosa County Sheriff's Office. The victim said Miller destroyed items in the house and the garage door. He said Miller also grabbed a knife, threatening to kill him, leaving him in fear of his and his mother's life. Miller is currently in the Santa Rosa County Jail with a $7,000 bond. All right, let's see what else we have here. Well, this guy, he made a bad situation worse. And this is coming out of Fort Myers, Florida. And the headline is, Florida man fleeing from deputies jumps off bridge into river in an unsuccessful escape attempt. A suspect fleeing a traffic stop dove off a bridge and into a river in an attempt to get away from Florida deputies. The Lee County Sheriff's Office, oh, we've been there before. That seemed to be one of the hot spots for our Florida man stories. The Lee County Sheriff's Office said deputies were trying to pull over a stolen van on Saturday evening in Fort Myers, but the driver, later identified as 34-year-old Brian Gray, instead sped off. The sheriff's office aviation unit arrived on the scene and followed the van from above, capturing video as the vehicle crashed into a barrier at the top of the Edison Bridge. That's when the sheriff's office said Gray got out of the van, jumped over the safety barrier, and dove off the bridge and into the Caloosahatchee River. I guess that's how you pronounce it. In an effort to elude the deputies. While the aviation unit kept an eye on the suspect in the water, the sheriff's office marine unit was deployed and pulled Gray from the river. He was transported to a nearby hospital for treatment. And while he may not have earned a gold medal for his high dive, Gray did find himself in hot water when he earned pending charges of grand theft auto and fleeing and eluding, the sheriff's office said. I mean, if they're following you in a helicopter, it's really tough to get away, I would assume. And jumping off a bridge probably isn't the best course of action to try to get the job done. All right. Let's see what else we got here. Oh, boy. Where's this out? This is going to be St. Petersburg. And this actually comes from Newsweek. And the headline is, Florida woman blames egg roll for erratic driving during a DUI arrest. A Florida woman who was arrested for a DUI Sunday gave police a unique defense for her erratic driving. She wasn't drunk, but had simply been eating an egg roll. That's it. I can't pronounce this woman's last name. Maria Jagerlowitz, 45, of St. Petersburg, was pulled over around 2 a.m. by an officer from Pinellas County Sheriff's Department, also frequent flyers of this segment, the Sheriff's Department, in order to check the well-being of the driver for sick, injured, or impaired. She had reportedly been swerving and driving in a dangerous manner. The officer observed that her speech was quote-unquote slurred and mumbled, and she had a strong odor of alcohol on her breath. She also reported having had trouble following simple instructions given by the deputy. Upon further questioning, she told law enforcement that she had been eating an egg roll while driving and causing the car to swerve. The arrest affidavit does not indicate that an egg roll or any pieces of egg roll were found in her possession. I mean, it's a hell of a good a story, I guess. Oh, and let's see here. While the egg roll could not be located, a number of other things, though, were found in her car, including a cut-up red plastic straw with white powdered residue on the inside. Wonder what that was. In addition to a variety of loose pills found in containers and plastic baggies, the pills were a mix of controlled substances and some were prescription-only, but she reportedly did not have a prescription for any of them. And some of the pills were later identified by investigators as the opioid Tramadol, and the medication is typically used to treat moderate to severe pain, but is abused as a narcotic. She later admitted to law enforcement that she had been drinking at her boyfriend's house earlier in the night. That's weird. It wasn't the egg roll after all. Investigators believe she was also under the influence of a number of pills that she had in her possession. Law enforcement did not believe she was suffering from any mental health issues based on field observations at the time of the traffic stop. She was arrested for two misdemeanor counts of driving under the influence and possession of drugs without a prescription. She was also booked with an additional charge of felony possession for the Tramadol, and she does have previous convictions of disorderly conduct and violation of probation. So there you go. That's an awful expensive egg roll, I guess, huh? But do you expect anything less from the good folks in Florida? I know I certainly don't. Right, that's going to do it for us. That's all the time we have today for Florida man stories, or Florida woman stories in the case of the egg roll. We'll be back tomorrow night. Mike will be with us, hopefully. Hopefully him and I are both feeling better. And we'll preview the Saints game on Sunday against the Eagles. We'll preview the NFL, and who knows what else we'll talk about. And also, you know, we'll wrap the week up with some Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. So that's going to do it for us. We're out of here. And until tomorrow, let's just play Gloria.
more Something to Say Radio Show content, go to somethingtosayradioshow.com. Follow us on Twitter at S2S Radio Show. And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/somethingtosayradio. After 84 weeks of free live stream music shows, FunkyUncle.live have moved our shows to the Howling Wolf so we can bring the funk to you every Wednesday at 7 p.m. We're selling tickets at the door and on our website for only 10 bucks. And tickets are half off at the door with a valid student ID. Don't worry, if you aren't able to join us at the Howling Wolf, FunkyUncle.live will still be live streaming the show every Wednesday for free. Coming to the FunkyUncle.live stage, on November 24th, it's Walter Wolfman Washington, and on December 1st, Mike Dusan. Don't forget that 100% of the proceeds generated from ticket sales goes to the Funk Fund that has raised over $550,000 and helped over 700 musicians and gig workers. So join us for a great cause at the Howling Wolf or at FunkyUncle.live.